This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Right then, are you on board?
Good.
Is everyone ready for takeoff? Lovely. Let's do it. Let's head through the universe with the Fun Kids Science Weekly. My name's Dan. Thanks for giving us a listen. This is the only show that takes you inside the secrets of the galaxy. Now today, we'll hear about a fireball that screeched through the sky a few months ago. Also, we'll talk about a brand new dinosaur. And in a sec, we'll learn the science behind probably the worst thing about summer. That's on the way. First, let's help some alien mates of ours get back home. This is N&G.
N&G's Meter Motivator.
Hey, N&G.
Energy experts at your service.
I'm learning how to be a meter motivator, and I can see how smart meters help us all manage the energy we use in our homes. But I've got a few questions for my gran. She's wondering whether to get one.
We love questions. Quiz away, Earthling.
Gran hasn't got broadband at home, so can she still have a smart meter?
Of course! Smart meters don't use your home broadband or any kind of internet to work. They come ready to do the job all by themselves and can be installed in just an hour or two.
So Gran won't have builders in to dig up the garden and lay new cables. That's what her friend Kathy said will happen.
Definitely not!
We've seen that smart meters come with separate displays, like a little computer screen you can plug in anywhere around the house. They seem pretty high-tech. But are they safe?
Smart meters and energy displays have been thoroughly tested and are as safe as any other electrical gadget you'd have in the home.
I've read that the smart meter and the energy display communicate using radio waves. Is it safe to have radio waves whizzing around?
Of course! We're surrounded with radio waves all the time, even if you don't have the radio on.
Radio waves are used in all sorts of gadgets, like TV remotes.
And the key fob for your car.
So, the display inside the house, the one which shows how much electricity has been used. Gran says, what if someone pressed the wrong button? What would happen? Would all the gadgets in the house suddenly spring to life?
The display is just that. It's a display. It shows you information about what's been used and what's in use. But it can't make any changes to the smart meter or any other object in your home, no matter how many buttons you press.
That's good to know. You said the smart meter communicates with the power companies too, which is good because Gran doesn't have to take readings anymore. But I don't know if Gran would like the information about what she's doing flying around. Like, will they know she's having a shower?
Great galaxies, of course not! They measure what's being used, but can't tell by what or by whom. And the information is securely packaged just for the power companies, so they can work out exactly the right bill with no meter readings needed.
Gran might like that. It's hard for her to see the meters, and she doesn't always like people coming in the house to take them either, or having to stay in to wait for them.
And we can't hang about either. Looks like we're gonna fuse. Good work, meter motivator. See you soon. Here it comes. Whoopee! I love a bit of fusion.
Bye, N&G, and thanks.
Here it comes.
Be a meter motivator with N&G with support from Smart Energy GB. Find out more at funkidslive.com/energy.
Remember, if you've got any science question that you need answered, send it over as a review for the Fun Kids Science Weekly on Apple Podcasts. I'll see it and I'll sort it out for you. This comes from Lings Claws 190809. Catchy name. They're from Australia, and they ask, why do we get brain freeze? Well, brain freeze, Lings, the scientific name is sphenopalatine ganglion neuralgia, and it's really, strictly, nothing to do with your brain at all. It's all to do with what happens is something cold touches the capillaries of the sinuses, which is the area of your face, around your mouth and your nose. It doesn't have to be ice cream, can be anything cold, maybe a particularly brisk gust of wind. And this cold quickly causes the blood vessels around your sinuses to narrow. They thin very quickly. But then they get warm again almost instantly as the air around the sinuses heats it up. So then they get big once more. And it's this rapid change of the blood vessels going from warm to cold, back to warm, from big to narrow, back to big. It's that rapid change that causes the brain freeze. So it's nothing really to do with your brain actually freezing as well. Quite a worrying title when you think about how simple the science behind it really is. But there's the answer, Ling's Claws. Thank you so much for sending it in. If you've got something sciencey that you need answered, let me know. I will either do the research myself or I'll find a proper specialised expert to sort it out for you. You can leave the question as a review for the Fun Kids Science Weekly over on Apple Podcasts. Now, how well do you really know your dinosaurs? I mean, you might know some of the big stuff, but what about the little things? And really, how much of what we do know is true? Well, Dr. Ben Garrod has put on some shows. He's fantastic. So You Think You Know About Dinosaurs tour. It's running until May all over the UK. And he's here on the Fun Kids Science Weekly to tell us what we know is actually true. Ben, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for having me here.
Brilliant. Right. So I want to start. I want to put you on the spot. What is the most common thought that we have about dinosaurs, which is actually complete rubbish, utter nonsense?
Okay, I'm going to ask you, and I can imagine all the kids are going to shout out the answer to this. Dan, are dinosaurs extinct or not?
Well, I answered a question on the Fun Kids Science Weekly the other day about why they are extinct. So I would say, Ben, dinosaurs, they've got to be extinct. Come on.
Oh, I can hear everyone shouting out in their homes right now. Dinosaurs did not die out 66 million years ago. They survived. And if you look into your garden or in the street or in your school playground now, they're still there. The birds are dinosaurs. They're not like dinosaurs or the descendants of dinosaurs. Birds are living dinosaurs. Every time you see a robin or a gull or a kestrel even, that's as much of a dinosaur as T-Rex or Velociraptor. That's the biggest misconception or sort of problem we have with dinosaurs, that we think they're all gone. Yeah, a lot of them have, but we've got 10,000 or so species of dinosaurs today, the birds.
But what? But how is that? I'm almost speechless. How is that at all possible? What makes a bird at all related to a T-Rex?
When you look at the bones of a bird, and you look at the bones of these theropod dinosaurs, which are the big two-legged predatory dinosaurs, usually with teeth, then the skeletons are really similar. Yes, admittedly, birds have lost their teeth, but the actual shape of the skull, the way the bone is formed in the body, is almost identical to some of those predatory dinosaurs. And because we can trace that back, it's almost like playing spot the difference. And there aren't many differences between bird skeletons and some dinosaur skeletons. So we can actually trace that back, and we can even look at the DNA in birds alive today and make predictions when they first start evolving. And because the fossil record is so good, we know that if we trace it back and we make a few more predictions, we are 99.9999999999% that our birds are dinosaurs. And we even know that they descended from things like dromaeosaurs, which are slightly larger versions of things like Velociraptor.
But what about some bigger creatures that may be around today? We find similarities and possibly even relations between some of those creatures and the dinosaurs?
Yeah, it's very easy to look at things like crocodiles and... Okay, is a crocodile a dinosaur, Dan?
Well, I'm not going to fall for this trick again, unless you're double bluffing me. I would say, Ben, yes, come on, a crocodile is a dinosaur now.
No, not even slimy. Oh! Here we go. This is where it gets really complicated. This is why science is so cool, because even the obvious stuff isn't always obvious unless you start investigating. And being a scientist is a little bit like being a detective sometimes. You've got to unravel the story and look at the clues. Now, things like crocodiles and alligators, they do look like dinosaurs, but we can trace their history back to about 84 million years ago. Now, they were around at the same time as some of the dinosaurs, such as T-Rex and Triceratops, but they evolved from different ancestors. So things like crocodiles are true reptiles, whereas the dinosaurs, they're like the weird cousins of the reptiles. They're not true reptiles. They're something slightly different. So yes, they were around at the same time, and there were some huge crocodilian ancestors, things like Sarcosuchus, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners will know of. Sarcosuchus was a huge crocodile, absolutely massive, and ate dinosaurs, but it wasn't a dinosaur. So even what is a dinosaur is a really complicated question, which is really fun to answer.
What about actual 100 million years ago? Not creatures today that are slightly like dinosaurs. Are there any things that we think about creatures back then that maybe we've got really confused? I once heard that raptors, velociraptors, were much smaller than we ever thought they could be. Is that true?
Yeah. How tall are you, Dan, roughly?
I am a 5'10".
That's exactly the same as my height. So when you watch a lot of these big, famous dinosaur films, I think you all know which one I'm talking about especially, there's some very famous scenes where velociraptors run through a kitchen and chase the kids, and they're huge, absolutely big monsters, about the size of me or Dan, nearly 6 feet or well over 2 metres. Actually, in real life, Velociraptor was the size of a big chicken. It wasn't a very big dinosaur at all. And that's because our understanding has changed. But also, the guy who made that film, that very famous one, Jurassic Park, he slightly twisted the truth a little bit. But we know that the one they used for Velociraptor was actually a slightly different animal. So he sort of merged two or three different dinosaurs into one, and he thought it'd be quite cool if it was slightly bigger. But no, Velociraptor, much, much smaller. Okay, the big one that a lot of people get wrong, I want to do a quick experiment with you. I want you to think of a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Now, close your eyes. Think of a T-Rex. Was it big and green and scaly? Was its tail dragging along the floor with its head really high somewhere? Did it roar? Yeah, all those things? None of those things are true. We also know that lots of these big predatory dinosaurs, like the theropods, most of them, if not all of them, would have had some level of feathering over their body. So imagine, even T-Rex might have been feathered. And we know that T-Rex's closest relatives were feathered. Things like Tarbosaurus and Uteranus were feathered. We haven't got the direct evidence for T-Rex yet, but it's just a matter of time. We also know that rather than dragging the tail along the floor like some big, weird, slow kangaroo sort of thing, its tail was high off the ground and its tail was really low, so it was a fast and dynamic predatory killer. So suddenly this T-Rex that was quite big and weird and walked on two legs and sort of mumbled around everywhere had its head down, its tail up, it was feathered, it was possibly brightly coloured, and it didn't roar. We don't know what sound it did make, but we think it might have sounded a little bit more like those dinosaurs alive today, the birds.
Oh, it's amazing learning this, but I would be truly devastated if, you know, this massively menacing creature that we've all got in our mind actually turned out to chirrup a bit like a garden robin.
Well, we know it didn't sound like a songbird, but it might have sounded a bit more like a very, very deep-voiced pigeon or possibly a very strange-sounding goose, which I know doesn't sound very scary, but remember T-Rex had teeth that were very, very long, about the size and shape of a very sharp banana, and had dozens and dozens of those teeth in its mouth. So you might have thought, well, that sounds rubbish. It would still have eaten you.
A pigeon, the most boring of all the birds as well.
Hey, I love pigeons. They're awesome.
So if you know, you finding this out, you knowing, means you must have seen fossils before. Ben, where do we need to go in the world to get a really keen understanding of what dinosaurs might have been like back in the day? Where would we need to look to find dinosaur remains right now?
One of the coolest things is it doesn't matter where you are as a listener right now, I can almost guarantee that within a few miles of where you live, there's a chance you can find fossils. Now, you can be in lots of different places in the British Isles. There are fossils all around, from the Jurassic coast in the south, right through to East Anglia, right to Scotland, Ireland, Wales even. And then further afield, they're all through China, the Middle East, they're right through Africa, all the way through Europe. You name a place, they're there. North America is full of them. Canada, full of them. South America, absolutely chock-a-block. They're even on the Antarctic islands down south. So wherever you are in the world, there's a different type of fossil very often. And you get a bit of a better picture where you are, and it's like a big jigsaw puzzle. By adding them all together, we get a really good understanding of where these things were. So you don't have to travel thousands of miles to find incredible discoveries. We're finding new and amazing discoveries all the time in the UK. One of my best examples is that 2 or 3 years ago, two brothers in Wales were walking along the beach and they found an incredible discovery that turned out to be a semi-complete dinosaur fossil skeleton, and it's an ancestor of things like T-Rex. It's a very small version of a T-Rex, and they've named it Dracoraptor, which means a dragon thief, after the Welsh connection there. And it's a brand new dinosaur we didn't know existed before. It's one of the earliest Jurassic predators. It's one of the earliest members of the Tyrannosaur family. And that was found just on the beach in Wales by two brothers. How cool is that?
It's just immense. Ben, thank you so much for coming on the show. The tour is So You Think You Know About Dinosaurs. If you're in the UK right now, you need to go and check this out. Be quick. It's playing April and May, heading all around the country, up in Scotland, to Dorking, to Chipping Norton, over to Ireland. And, I mean, it's going to be like 2 hours filled with this stuff. Ben, thank you so much for coming on the Fun Kids Science Weekly.
Cheers, Dan. And kids, keep being geeky.
Hello there, I'm George, and I'm here to tell you all about the Fun Kids Download. It's a podcast you can get from wherever you get your podcasts. This week, I'm joined by animation royalty, not actual royalty, but the stars of How to Train Your Dragon 3, plus author Anne-Marie Howe, who's chatting about her brand new book. If you're lucky, you might even get a yes-no game. That is the Fun Kids Download. Get it from wherever you get your podcasts.
For this week's Dangerous Dan, we're looking at something incredibly recent, something that only happened a few months ago. And for it, we need to head to space. Did you hear about this in the news? A huge fireball exploded in the Earth's atmosphere just last December. Now, the blast was the second largest of its kind in the last 30 years, and a fireball is when a meteor is travelling so fast through space, which is pretty much a vacuum, there's nothing in its way, but then it heads into the Earth's atmosphere, where we've got loads of dust up there. It's met by so much air resistance that it explodes into a ball of fire. Now, these fireballs, they only happen a few times every century, and it flew into the atmosphere at 20 miles a second. It exploded 25 kilometers from the Earth's surface, which is a shockingly close distance, and it blew up with 10 times the energy of an atomic bomb. Now, the reason this is so deadly is because, to be honest, I'm not too sure if anyone knew about it. I can't find anything online to suggest that we knew this was happening. Seems to be a bit of a surprise, but hopefully, secretly, deep down in NASA, they were on the case about this. Because clearly, meteors heading towards the Earth, it's pretty devastating. I mean, we were fortunate this time because it blew up over the Bering Sea near Russia, which meant a lot of that energy was absorbed by the water below. But we may not be so lucky next time. And I think you'll agree, it's pretty dangerous. It's time to get some of your gadget questions answered with an episode of Techno Mum.
Techno Mum, engineering explorers.
Everyone in my class is mad about fitness trackers. Mine measures my temperature, heart rate, the distance I've walked, and even counts how many steps I take. 999, 1,000 steps.
Pretty impressive. Although my target is 10,000. I've still got quite a long way to go.
Your fitness tracker is way cooler than mine, though. It even tells you how much sleep you get.
I know the answer to that. It's never enough sleep. I don't tend to use my fitness tracker at night, though. It's too uncomfortable.
What if they could put a fitness tracker inside you? Like an implant? It could take all sorts of measurements about your health. Kind of like a robot brain, keeping an eye on things.
Not sure I fancy being home to a robot, but it's a great idea. In fact, people are already experimenting with electronics in futuristic ways. Maybe you'd make a good electrical or electronic engineer.
Electrical and electronic engineers? So basically, they're the people who make gadgets work, right?
Gadgets? There's a bit more to it than that. Electrical engineers understand how electricity behaves. Electronic engineering is about putting that electricity to work inside machinery, using circuits and components. If you think about all the different kind of things that are powered by electricity or have circuit boards, you'll begin to see that this type of engineering could take you in a huge amount of directions. Your remote control car and drone have circuit boards inside, designed by an engineer to be able to take instructions from the controller. At a pop concert, electronics inside the guitars, keyboards and microphones will be carrying the music to the speakers. And they'll have circuit boards to carry out the job of making it nice and loud. And just about any type of vehicle that you can think of, cars, buses, trains, planes, boats, and even rockets, anything which has an electrical power source will have been designed with the help of electronic and electrical engineers, all designing the circuits to deliver the power where it's needed.
I guess you'd need to understand a lot about circuits.
That's right. Electricity behaves in a very particular way, depending on what material it's in contact with. It's also affected by things like magnets. Electrical and electronic engineers have to have a good knowledge of these things. And circuits use common components which electronic engineers will use as building blocks on the circuit boards. Much of the work is planned on computers, but building circuit boards will be done by machines or by hand using soldering irons. Here's some fun technology we can thank electronic engineers for. Virtual reality. This one's a roller coaster experience. I hope you're not afraid of heights.
Whoa, it's getting very high.
The electronic engineer has created a machine which translates body movements into changing images on the screen. Electronic circuits are carrying information from movement sensors to the circuits, which process the computer images and back to the screen, all in real time. Hold on tight.
Whoa! That's so cool.
There are loads of cool jobs for engineers, almost as many jobs as there are inventions.
Engineering Explorers, created with support from the Institution of Engineering and Technology to celebrate the Year of Engineering. Find out more at funkidslive.com/technomum.
Let's take a look at all the science that has been in the news this week. The UK's air-breathing rocket engine is set for key tests. The hypersonic engine is part jet, part rocket. It relies on pre-cooler heat exchanger technology, and it's testing next month in America. And it travels 5 times the speed of sound. Hopefully, it could get a plane from London to Australia, the other side of the world, in just 4 hours. So hopefully the tests and this new technology all run smoothly. Speaking of new tech, an internet startup has secured over $1 billion in new funding to launch a global high-speed broadband network. It launched its first satellites for service last month, and by using many more satellites in space, it hopes to bring internet to parts of the world where there were none before. And finally, scientists have identified a new dinosaur in Australia. The Gallienosaurus dorsi was alive 125 million years ago, and it would have been the same size as a wallaby. Its jaw resembles an upturned ship, which is why it's called the Gallienosaurus. It belonged to the ornithopod family, and it would have been a herbivore. That is it for this week's Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. If you've not already, by the way, make sure that you subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts from, if that's in Apple or in Spotify or Google Podcasts. That way, each week, every episode will automatically download to your phone or tablet. While you're on Apple Podcasts, by the way, if that is where you get your shows from, make sure you leave us a review. It's the best place to let me know a sciencey question that you want answered. Also, while you're there, you can get more of all the brilliant science series that you've heard today. We've got loads more free for you to listen to too. You can also find them on the Fun Kids app and over at funkidslive.com. And Fun Kids are a kids radio station from the UK. You can listen to us all over the country on your DAB digital radio, on that free Fun Kids app, and at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.